Good evening. One of the most famous names, one of the most famous personalities in Zen literature and in Zen legends is Bodhidharma. If you've been practicing for a time, you know about Bodhidharma. Everybody should know the Bodhidharma story. It's key. It's key to the teachings. So it's said that Bodhidharma was the 28th patriarch, 28th Buddhist patriarch in a line from the Buddha himself. And it is said that he is the first Zen patriarch. In the early part of the 6th century, Bodhidharma traveled to China. Well, Buddhism was already in China. But it was studied entirely by the academics and the elite and the men and women of the royal court. The Buddhists in India, Bodhidharma and the other monks, they heard about the kind of Buddhism in China, and they thought that's not right. They don't understand. So Bodhidharma went to China in the year 520, and China was not unified, but had several different small kingdoms, and the emperor of one of the kingdoms, Emperor Wu, wanted Bodhidharma to visit. And so he sent his emissaries to find him, and they brought Bodhidharma to Emperor Wu's court. Buddhism was flourishing in an academic way in China and in Emperor Wu's kingdom. So when Bodhidharma came to the court, the emperor said to him, I've done many things to support Buddhism here. I've built temples. I've built libraries and had the scriptures translated from Indian to Chinese. I've had enabled many monks to be ordained and lots of translations. I've done all these things. So how much merit have I earned? And Bodhidharma said, no merit. So the emperor knew about Buddhism intellectually and philosophically, much like a scholar. But his way of supporting Buddhism was through material means only. His wealth and the labor of his people, he did not support it in a spiritual way. He didn't know how. They didn't know how. They didn't know the meaning of that. He supported the monks, and he supported the temples, and he supported the translation, but his support of Buddhism was based primarily on gaining merit for himself. That was his understanding. He thought he was doing a good thing, and in some ways, yes, that's true, but he missed the fundamental point. The emperor's view of his life and his life activities was to keep a score, keep a scorecard of his good deeds, you know, and so he could accumulate some kind of points that was important to him, with the thinking that it would gain him something. Do good deeds to gain something for himself. But Bodhidharma's view was entirely the opposite. Bodhidharma's view was, when you do something, you should always return to emptiness. In other words, keep no idea of acquiring anything from your deeds. Bodhidharma's view was, you must constantly renew, you must constantly resume your oneness with everything. And in reality, there is nothing to add, nothing to subtract. So there is no need to keep score. But when Bodhidharma said, no merit, the emperor did not understand that. And he didn't understand the teachings, did not understand Buddhism. So, despite all his efforts and despite all of his activities and his material support, there was no merit. But if Bodhidharma had, if the emperor had understood Bodhidharma, his support would have had great value. But he didn't understand the meaning of no merit. So it's important for us to understand Bodhidharma's meaning. Or there is the danger that our efforts and our practice will be buried by an idea of gaining something from our activity. So when that happens, you will hear people say things like, I've been practicing Zazen for many years, but nothing happens. In other words, where's my merit? And if we practice with that orientation of gaining something or having something exciting happen to us, we become very frustrated and disappointed. So if we practice for the purpose of collecting something or gaining something, we will always complain. Oh, I've practiced my whole life. Nothing happens. This is a waste of time. And frustration arises and irritation arises when we have that kind of viewpoint. Where is my merit? But the irritation and the impatience will diminish and recede if we understand important point, and that is that our life is complete in a single moment. This one and this one, this one. Our life is complete each moment. So we have to understand that we are starting fresh over and over in each moment by returning to emptiness, to the oneness of emptiness. If we put our emphasis on our practice each day, if every day is guided by our practice, then we will no longer worry about accumulating or gaining something. And that means we will never have regrets later for having gained nothing. We will never have regrets about not gaining merit if we base our activity on our practice. But because our practice is not based on something that is tangible or that we can hold, it's difficult for people to appreciate the essence or the basis of the practice. A practice based on emptiness. Logically, this makes no sense. It's very difficult for people. But our practice is based on nothing tangible. It is based on something that exists forever and that has no limits and no form. This practice is still so pretty young in this country. 50 or 60 years, that's a pretty short time. So, still immature. And not easily understood by people first coming to it. And so, there is a tendency to feel, well, I will practice, I will try to practice, but I want to have a great teacher who will teach me many things. I want to practice and study with him or with her so I can accumulate wisdom from him or her. And sometimes people find somebody who they think will be able to do that for them. But it's important to see your teacher with very clear eyes, with Dharma eyes. It's only with Dharma eyes can we discern who is great, who is our teacher. And this was the emperor's problem. He was hung up on the idea that he needed to accumulate something. He called it merit. He wanted to accumulate something for himself. And he wanted Bodhidharma to verify it and to tell him, yes, lots of merit. But Bodhidharma said, no merit. And the emperor was disappointed because he couldn't see who Bodhidharma really was. If we have eyes to see, if we can see with Dharma eyes, then an ordinary person who maybe never even heard of Buddhism can be a great teacher. And there are people like that all around us. And they're are very good, you know, but they don't attract attention. But we can find them when we have a Dharma eyes. If we become the least little bit arrogant or prideful, it won't be possible to have Dharma eyes. And then it will be impossible to avoid regret later on in life. So the most important thing for us is to develop Dharma eyes, or modest eyes. Eyes that are not always looking at ourself, either with ambition or with self-pity. This is Dharma eyes. You can trust your understanding of practice if you see with modest eyes, Dharma eyes. Then there's no need to rely too much on what you read. There's no need to rely too much on the ideas that are created in the mind. Because with modest eyes, your Dharma eye opens. We practice to express our inherent wisdom, to express our inherent enlightenment. But if we strive after that enlightenment, or in other words, if enlightenment becomes a goal that you feel you must have, then you have the emperor's problem. It will not be right practice, and you will not have Dharma eyes. As the Buddhist teaching tells us, and as we come to recognize in through our own experience, we exist temporarily. We exist on this earth temporarily, but everything is always changing. So in reality, nothing exists. There is just something that is constantly changing. We can see this truth with Dharma eyes. So a few weeks ago, my wife and I went for a hike with some friends after some rain, after one of the very nice rains that we had. And the ground was soft and wet, and there was trickles of water running from the rain. And others had gone before us on this path, and I was fascinated by the prints. The prints that were left in the mud. There were prints of people's walking shoes, people's boots, left prints. And there were prints of horseshoes. And there were animal tracks. All had gone before us and left their trace. And I thought, what a wonderful mosaic of life is here, and this mud is letting us see. And as we walked, and I looked at these things, the water was still running down the hill from the previous rain, and the water slowly washed away these tracks, slowly washed them away. leaving no traces. And I thought, did they exist or did they not exist? The emperor asked Bodhidharma, he said, what is Buddhism? And the Bodhidharma answered, in the realm of clear Dharma, there is no sage and no common people. And the emperor said, well then, who sits in front of me? And Bodhidharma said, I don't know. Bodhidharma's teaching was that there is no monk, there is no sage, there is no emperor, and there is no merit. He was tough. The point of our practice is to change or transform our ignorance into wisdom. And in the process, to become enlightened by our ignorance. And our practice is to develop confidence in our own eyes. So we don't stick to any ideas of existence or non-existence, because these ideas are simply clouds covering the truth. Our practice is simply to just let our mind be clear without clouds. When we no longer worry about merit for ourself, we sweep away the clouds. Does anyone have a question tonight? Carolina.
When people talk about the realm of the absolute, what part of your conversation was that? That last part? Would that be the realm of the absolute? That concept, the realm of the absolute.
Realm of absolute. You mean where there are no distinctions?
I guess so, that's it.
Okay.
So there's no sage, there's no...
Everything being born again and again continuously. Oh, yes, please, Columbine.
I was wondering, let's say you have a friend or a family member who kind of is unable to express their love in a real genuine way, so they maybe buy things for you. Should you play along and sort of let them feel good about their actions, or... Because it sounds like in this story, he didn't make the emperor feel good. He said, you know, you didn't gain anything. And so that was disappointing to the emperor. Would it have... would that have done if he had kind of said, oh, you did great things?
It's a good question. What do you say to a family member? That's a little different than what do you say to the emperor. Bodhidharma wasn't concerned if the emperor was happy with him or not. But when we are relating to our friends and relatives, we take that into consideration. We don't want to create separation. So you have to find, we have to find subtle ways or indirect ways to let the family member know how we feel. And to let them know in a way that doesn't confront, let them know what we would prefer, which is feelings of affection rather than a box, a gift. And how you do that, that depends on many things. But if, you know, if you have that determination, I'm going to figure out a way to do that. I'm not just going to play along for the sake of keeping things happy. I've got to find a way to see if we can make a shift. And it's tricky. But that too is part of our practice. Thank you. Umar.
Yes, thank you for the lecture. Something along those lines of your lecture has been on my mind, and I wanted to ask you, people learn a practice or they learn a craft, and or they learn how to they take on a profession, and they identify with all these things of everything that they've done, all their experiences, all their achievements, so much that it turns its head, I mean, it turns on its own head and becomes sort of put down or discriminatory. They say that I have this experience and you don't. It's almost like saying, you know, die and thou. And whole idea of having no merit and Bodhidharma telling the emperor that you have no merit. It's an interesting way of looking at things, but in situations like those, when somebody does that to somebody else, sometimes anger comes up, and sometimes when I even see it at work, I just feel offended that people treat each other badly, and so I don't know how to sometimes handle it. I just walk away from that situation, because I don't want to be a part of something like that where somebody's putting somebody else down. That's not, to me, a good way of dealing with something like that.
It's not that people have no merit. It's that it's a mistake to try to earn merit. So even if you meet or have to work with someone who is constantly doing that, trying to gain something, if we remember that there is merit there, but they don't see it because of all their striving. So when we relate to someone, we try to relate to their inherent merit. And go beyond the behavior that's disconcerting. I remember Suzuki Roshi being that way. You know, when he came to the United States, he came to San Francisco during the, what do you call it, Flower Children Days, or what do you call that? There was a name for it. The hippie days. And so many of those young people were attracted to him and created a community, but they behaved in those ways. The flower children doing various strange things, and he didn't pay too much attention to the various odd behaviors. He related to with them at their core. In his demeanor and his manner and his words, he related to their true nature, not the silly things they were doing on the surface to attract attention. That's why you often hear the people who are now older, and the people from those days who are older, who were very young at the time and now they're older, and they say, what I remember about Suzuki Roshi is he saw me. You hear that a lot. He saw me. Meaning, he didn't get hung up by my craziness. He saw me. He saw who I was. And when you feel that way about someone, when someone sees you that way, you become very encouraged. It's like somebody saying, it's there. That was his greatness, you know. He just didn't quit at the boundary. He saw people's and encouraged people's inherent merit and paid no attention to the merit they were trying to earn on an everyday basis. So that could be our practice too. Thank you.